You are now listening to the On Cue Performance Therapy Podcast, where the worlds of sports medicine and performance collide. My name is Mike Quintons. I'm a physical therapist with an entrepreneurial mindset that specializes in treating orthopedic and sports injuries. I'm bringing on the brightest and sharpest in the field of sports medicine to share their best practices and explore the gap where medicine meets performance. What's up, Performance Therapy Nation? This is your host of the On Cue Performance Therapy Podcast, Mike Quintons. Today, we are joined by Doug Davidson, the Associate Director of Sports Performance and Strength Conditioning for the Las Vegas Golden Knights. We will be discussing Doug's training philosophies for elite-level hockey players during both in-season and off-season programming. Doug Davidson is the Associate Director of Sports Performance and Strength Conditioning for the Las Vegas Golden Knights, where he is responsible for maximizing the athletic potential of players through their development, instruction, progression, oversight, and documentation of individual and group performance enhancements and recovery while training athletes. Prior to joining the Golden Knights, he spent two seasons as a strength conditioning coach for the Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins, the American Hockey League affiliate to the Pittsburgh Penguins, where he oversaw all aspects of off-ice training, assisted in rehab, and oversaw team meals, supplement use, and nutrition. Before joining the Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins Hockey Club, Davidson served as a strength conditioning coach at Gary Roberts High Performance Center from 2013 to 2015, where he worked with a variety of male and female athletes, including elite hockey players, ranging from NHL players to aspiring youth. Davidson was a strength conditioning coach intern at Queen's University in 2010 through 2013. In 2013, he received the Varsity Service Award for his contribution to Queen's University Varsity Athletics as a strength conditioning intern. He also completed a strength conditioning internship at Cressy Performance in 2012. Doug Davidson attended Queen's University, where he graduated with honors in 2013 with a bachelor's degree in physical and health education. He's a certified strength conditioning coach through the NSCA. All right, Doug, thank you so much for joining us, man. How you doing today?
Doing well. Just a nice little day off here on the end of a long road trip, so it's good.
Yeah. Now, so how long's the road trip?
We left Vegas last Sunday evening, and then play tomorrow and then fly back to Vegas.
Good, man. Well, hopefully you get home soon and safe. Take it easy on our guys tonight. All right.
Flyers have been on a struggle bus.
Yeah, it's a little struggle bus. Let's get into it, man. What's your philosophy around off-ice conditioning during the season?
In terms of like energy systems training?
Yeah.
Honestly, I don't do a ton of it in season. And one of the realities of our league is you're constantly trying to like balance between maintaining or building fitness and managing fatigue. We're in a stretch right now, we're playing 26 games in 52 days and most of them are on the road. So, you know, let's be honest, if guys are playing a reasonable amount of minutes, they're not deconditioning playing games every other day. So there's definitely certain circumstances where it might be necessary. For example, if a guy's not in the lineup, they're a healthy scratch, and they're only practicing, then there might need to be some. Granted, I find that's far more beneficial to do that on the ice with the assistant coaches, where they can actually integrate skill work, decision making, stay sharp from a hockey playing perspective. But there are cases where, for whatever reason, logistically, or if we have some game time decisions, they might not do as much as they should on the ice at morning skate from an on-ice conditioning standpoint. So I might do a little extra after my strength weight room session with them in the evening once we know that they're not going to play in that game. And then there are situations with certain guys that are low minutes. And honestly, they're more the concern from my standpoint, because the guys that are out of the lineup, they're doing extra work with the coaches, and I think they do a really good job. We have really good communication there. But it's those guys that they're not doing a ton of extra or nearly as much extra as the healthy scratches, but they're not necessarily getting a lot of minutes. Those are the guys where I might do a little extra top-up work after games here and there, depending on if it's needed. I mean, if you have a veteran guy who's got a massive aerobic engine and has developed, you know, the hockey-specific conditioning over years and it's already in place, it doesn't take that much to maintain it. So in those cases, you do as much as you need to, but ultimately, if a guy's not playing a lot or not playing at all, it's an advantage of them being fresh, and you don't want to take that away from them.
For sure.
So it's kind of finding that balance, and it's very circumstantial, I'd say. The one exception would be, you know, I think there's a lot of value in doing some lower level aerobic work just from offsetting all the anaerobic work that they do on the ice and just an overall recovery, ANS health as well. our guys get so ramped up that I find that low level aerobic work can be really beneficial to help them kind of tone down. But other than that, I typically don't do a ton, at least with the players that are in the lineup.
ANS is autonomic nervous system.
Yeah. Quick follow-up with that. Do you feel like hockey players, as far as like what type of conditioning, like are they mostly running? Are they doing bike? Are they doing any sort of other like cardio machine or mostly like circuit style cardio?
It's all over the map. I like using the bike, to be honest, just because you can manipulate the resistance quite a bit and you can really kind of dial in. It's easy to control kind of the wattage, the RPM, you're getting all that feedback. And while nothing's going to completely replicate skating, there is some similar movement patterns and it, kind of the feel to it. But it depends what we're trying to accomplish. If it's more of an overall conditioning, I typically like the bike. But I mean, also if we're looking more kind of drive respiratory changes, either the VersaClimber or like a total body train or something like that. Also do circuits as well. It really depends on what we're trying to accomplish. But obviously, like, you know, cyclical versus non-cyclical, it's going to have different adaptations. So it really depends what you're trying to do and also player preference. Some guys like to run. Honestly, most hockey players are terrible runners.
Right, that's why
I generally try not to do too much just because, you know, if sprinting in some cases, unless it's a guy that's done it, is really good at it, I don't want to have that risk. And then also a lot of the kind of repetitive stress of distance running can have some issues. But I've had guys that they like to do it. They can do it without issues, and that's fine. So it really depends on the individual and kind of what they did with their coaches as they were coming up before they got to me is really going to dictate. But on my end, it's typically some combination of circuit training, a lot of bike, and honestly, like, I think either road bike or mountain bike's ideal just because, particularly in the off season, more so doing longer duration is really, really important. And no one wants to sit on a spin bike for an hour and a half. Whereas if you're outside,
something to look at.
Exactly.
Nice, it's scenery.
Much more enjoyable, and you can get some hills in there as well. So, yeah.
Yeah, hockey guys like to go fast, I feel like, you know, so you can't really do that running as well as you can on the ice. I like on the bikes, probably. And probably hills, depending on where they're located, if it's up north, as opposed to Vegas, you know, some mountains and so forth. But that makes sense. How important do you feel maximal strength is for hockey players?
It's kind of, as with any team sport, absolute strength's an important foundational quality. How much it directly impacts performance, you know, is going to vary. If you had a kind of a continuum of sports, it's probably more important for hockey compared to a lot of team sports, other than maybe, you know, American football or rugby. It's a collision sport. There are battles for sure. And then also because you don't have as much friction, you have longer ground contact time. So force is going to be more of a factor in skating compared to other field sports. And also the unique thing about hockey is there's a lot of different strategies for how guys are successful skating wise. So you have some guys that are more reflexive. You have some guys that are very unimpressive in terms of their kind of rate of force development, their limb speed. But they're really strong. They're able to produce a high amount of force, and they have really good skating mechanics, edge control. So all they need is a couple strides to create that momentum, and then they can maintain it with their edge work. And that's kind of a really interesting thing with hockey players is some of the best skaters we have them do some of your traditional off-ice power tests. They're not overly impressive. They're very strong, though, and they might only take one or two hard, powerful strides to get going. And, you know, that's interesting, especially from a training standpoint, because obviously, you know, rate of force development, limb speed, genetics are going to be your limiting factor there. Obviously, you can prove with training, but you're kind of working with what your parents gave you to a certain extent. Whereas in my experience, and most people would agree, training absolute strength, it's a lot easier to make improvements. So
sure.
Found a lot of guys where they might not be overly dynamic, but if you just keep building really good strength and you do it in an intelligent way where you're not kind of stealing some of the other qualities that are going to make them efficient skaters, you can have some nice improvements in their on-ice skating, especially because with skating, there's different qualities needed for different aspects of it. So your first step acceleration versus speed off the rush are going to be slightly different. And then if you're kind of skating down low, doing puck protection, doing a lot of cutbacks, strength's going to be a much bigger factor there. So on the flip side, you know, we have some guys that really aren't that strong. They're just really athletic and really skilled skaters.
Yeah.
So depending on the strategy you use, their style of the game, if they're a defenseman that's got to clear the net, or if they've got more of a heavy game down low in the offensive zone as a forward, it's going to be much more important. Some guys can get away with not having a lot. It's really varies. That being said, I do think having a really strong base of absolute strength from just a full body overall general physical capacity is really, really important in that, you know, it sets you up to be able to kind of handle the wear and tear of the season in the same way that I think having a really resilient aerobic system does the same.
Yeah, I remember, like, we played, listen, Philly's not the mecca of hockey by any means, but we love our hockey out here. So I remember growing up playing roller hockey, and again, different than ice, but I had a couple of buddies that were good hockey players, and they weren't the strongest, but their skill and finesse and their ability to change direction and their coordination, really, is what I would call it, right? Their coordination was just so far more superior in advance than their peers, which wasn't saying a whole lot. But at higher levels, I would imagine that's more significant. And a lot of those guys are usually like thinner, longer, right? So like they need to build strength. So, I mean, like that kind of leads us to our next question. What do you feel are the key physical qualities that need to be trained during the off season?
Yeah, I mean, I think that depends on the individual again and kind of what their areas of needs are. So kind of generally speaking, want to, you know, talk with the players, talk with hockey staff, coaches, management, scouts, whoever, kind of get an idea like what aspects of their game are kind of their limiting factors from them to taking the next step, as well as, you know, what are the things that are good at? What makes them elite? Because, you know, as much as people always want to talk about building up weaknesses, at the end of the day, with the guys I'm working at, they're already at the highest level possible. They're there for a reason. So you don't want to steal away their superpower. You know, you want to make sure you're taking advantage of that and then filling in the gaps as needed. So I think assessing that and doing some individualization. That being said, I do think the two big foundational qualities that I kind of touched on are absolute strength and aerobic fitness, just in terms of, as I alluded to, the density of our schedule is so grueling. And I think a lot of people, when they talk about training for a sport, they look at the game itself, which is important. Don't get me wrong. Obviously, you need that to have success. But I think one of the big issues is the reality is, particularly at this level, it's not just the game itself you need to be able to handle and perform. And it's the practices. It's the travel. It's not doing it for a game once a week. It's every other day with the density we've got. So kind of building the physical capacities to handle that and being able to recover, I think, is massively important. And you'll see some guys come in at training camp, typically not NHL guys, and our AHL staff does an amazing job. So it's typically, haven't seen this nearly as much the past few years, but you know, you'll see guys come and they'll blow testing out of the water in terms of their kind of explosive abilities. But then you get 2-3 weeks into training camp and you retest it and it's down 20%. So they built these physical qualities from a speed power standpoint, but they don't necessarily have the foundation to support it long term through an entire season. So from my perspective, one, it's getting away early on in the off season, it's getting away from what they do all season long, giving them a break, especially from the ice typically, and then building kind of those general capacities that, one, aren't necessarily tied to in-game performance, but are going to help support their performance throughout the year. And two, aren't really something we can train, at least in a focused standpoint, in season because of the density of our schedules. So it's going to be a big emphasis on aerobic work early on, typically, and building kind of general absolute strength while still working on kind of the foundational progression, or sort of the progressions of what the kind of key areas we want to build off from a in-game performance standpoint, and then shifts as we go through the season.
Like a durability of strength, not necessarily only with injuries, right, or mitigating the risk, but durability to be able to continue to perform so you don't have that 20% drop off.
Exactly. You know, a lot of times you'll see the guys that are more reflexive or that are just very neural in nature, but they don't necessarily have the muscular strength. When they're tired, they're flat. They're washed. Whereas if you have guys that have the muscular strength to support that, they might have a drop off when they're tired, but it's not nearly as steep a drop off. So, you know, I think, again, on a day-to-day basis, the guys that I've seen historically be able to maintain a high level of performance without the peaks and valleys throughout the year are typically guys that have really good aerobic system, have really good muscular strength. And likewise, those are also the players that historically I've seen able to continue to perform as they kind of get to the later stage of their careers without having the steep drop-offs that some other players do.
That makes sense. All right, what are your thoughts on lifting after and before games versus days off? I think I like this because you guys see a lot of games in a short period of time. Mm-hmm. I also think it's worth mentioning that it's compared to the NBA a lot because they're both 82 games, right? I think here's what's different. The NBA isn't flying to Calgary. They're not flying to Vancouver. You guys, the travel's got to be brutal. And I don't know how convenient. I haven't studied. All right, you're going to be in New York and then Long Island and then Philly and then DC. Or like, regardless of that, it's a lot of travel time. So when do you get the workouts in? Before games, after games, days off? What are your thoughts on that?
I think it varies depending on the individual, particularly with veteran guys. Like if I get a guy that's been in the league for 10 years and they have a certain way of doing anything, as long as they're still having success and they're getting the job done, I'm not worried. Generally speaking, I'm a fan of doing kind of your traditional lifts post-game. One, it consolidates the stressor. And then also our guys' arousal levels on game day are so, so high. You know, they start warm up at 5:30. The game might not be over till 9:30, 10. So that's a long sustained arousal. And then if you actually look, you know, some guys might only play like 8, 9, 10 minutes.
Right.
And they're not going all out that whole time. Generally, those low minute guys are a little higher pace because that's what their job. But so a lot of times kind of the autonomic arousal isn't in line with the metabolic load. So I've found that doing some more hypertrophy style work after the game actually helps some guys kind of come down.
If we can get into some of those details, like are we talking programming and in what fashion? High reps, low reps, just far
less? Moderate reps. Again, okay. You got on the flip side, one, guys have to be willing to do it. And right. Two, they just played a game. You're not trying to beat them up even more.
Sure.
But right. High enough range that you're getting metabolic stimulus, but also still low enough that you're getting a strength stimulus and then kind of managing it from there. So generally speaking, I like doing that. You're also consolidating the stressors, and then that gives us a lot more room to either do pure recovery or more durability-based work on our practice days, or also when you get in the schedule where, you know, it might just be completely days off. If you're not lifting on game day, you're not getting any opportunity to do off-ice work, and I think that's actually where you're really getting in troubles with kind of on-contact injuries where they're not getting that off-ice stimulus. And it's just kind of culturally ingrained where that's where most guys do it. That's historically what's been done. So it's just kind of what gets done. But I actually do agree with it. That being said, I have some guys that prefer doing more recovery-based stuff after the game and then doing lifting the day before a game. They just prefer that. And I also think kind of using warm-up and potentiation is another really good strategy, particularly with younger guys that need to build volume. It's a really good way to get extra strength work in, which cumulatively over 82 games actually adds up quite a bit.
I think the arousal component is huge, where when guys are amped up, you want to like keep them amped up. It's hard to like get them amped up, get them to relax, get them amped up, get them to relax again.
But especially I think if they haven't used that like metabolic load. Piece. There's so much still there. You know what I mean?
You know, I just think that's a major component that, you know, most coaches don't really consider about, especially pro sports, is like the high stress, high demands of what they do is real. And then, you know, getting them to do that again the next day to come in for a hard lift is hard for most players to do. Sure. So. And then the consolidation of stress, I 100% agree. I think that's like, that's the concept to have is let's consolidate the stress and recover the next day.
Can we explain what that means? I'll be honest, like I have an idea of what that means, but I feel like a lot of our listeners probably don't know what consolidating stress means.
Basically means the idea of they've already gone through a ton of stress physically in the game. Adding a little bit extra in the weight room after, as long as you're, you know, reasonable with the loading and the volume, isn't really going to make it that much harder to recover. And if anything, as I kind of mentioned, I think a lot of times it helps guys recover.
Yeah.
Whereas then if you put that in the next day and you're having the lift, now all of a sudden they've got the day where they should be recovering for the game day the next day, they're having that stress. And again, it depends. Like I said, some of our older guys that have built up like a really good foundation, they prefer just recovering after the game and then doing some low volume strength work the day before a game, and they've built up to the point where that doesn't affect their recovery and it makes them feel better. So again, it is going to be very individual and different guys are going to have different preferences. And a lot of kind of what I try to do is help guys figure out what works for them. But generally speaking, I think if you can leave the practice days to be as recovery oriented as possible or more focused on hip health, shoulder health, lower level activities, I think it's, in the long run, it's going to be beneficial because otherwise you're having high physical stress day in, day out, sustained over a long period of times. And as you mentioned, the travel factor is especially when you're on the road. Guys don't want to do a heavy lift when they got in at 2, 3 a.m. the night before. Right. Like, just the reality.
I get it. And not to mention the number of international players in the NHL. I would imagine in the NHL, you're going to see a much wider, broader range of international athletes on the team than you would in any other sport in the United States. Definitely more than football, definitely. I think basketball would be the only one that would compete a little bit, right? If that. Yeah, I mean,
a lot of Canadians with hockey, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, you have a lot of, like, Eastern Europeans, too. Mm-hmm. Like, so trying to figure out what works for everybody, like any sport, but especially if there's language barriers or other dietary issues, like, there's a lot of challenges, I would imagine, that come with that. So, all right, last question. What are the key concepts in making goalie training different for skaters?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think a lot of their needs are fairly similar. Like, I think across all positions, just basic building physical capacities, you're going to use the same exercises from a general standpoint. There's certainly certain orthopedic considerations. And then with kind of the power development and the kind of special strength type work, you're obviously, the style of locomotion is going to be different. Goaltenders are moving purely lateral or transverse. Whereas obviously the skating forward skating stride, you're having a big transverse and frontal plane component to the stride, but you're propelling forward. So it is a different type of movement, and there's not nearly as many types of movement in a goalie compared to the skaters. But base pelvic stability, general strength, physical capacities are going to be same. You're probably going to need more aerobic fitness just because you're playing the whole game. And honestly, practices for goalies are way worse for players. Just when practices are planned, they don't really take into consideration goalies. So the goalies are basically taking shots nonstop as opposed to rotating in and out like the skaters. You're obviously, the kind of ranges of motion at the hip that the goalies need to work through are going to be a lot greater. So, you know, maintaining strength and stability at those end ranges is going to be important. That's important with skaters as well. It's just far greater ranges and far greater muscle excursions with goalies compared to what's required of the players. But other than that, I think, you know, the basics are the same. And then it's just kind of some of the specific power drills you might do, and being aware of how much greater the range of motion component is with the goalies compared to players.
I'm interested in the conditioning part, though. You said they need more conditioning than those who are skaters?
Better aerobic fitness.
Better aerobic fitness. Even though they're not moving a ton during the game?
I mean, just because they're, one, they're, it's kind of like similar to a pitcher, right? You're in there nonstop. Players, they're going super high intensity, and then they're getting off and they're resting. Whereas the goalie, they're standing there the whole time. They're engaged, like they're paying attention, both for all positions, but particularly for goalies. I don't think the cognitive load gets nearly enough attention. But then also, if you're in the D zone, you're in crouch position, you're moving around your crease. So depends on your system and the flow of play and if your team's the dominant team. If you're not getting a lot of shots, yeah, it's not going to be hard. But if your team's defending in your zone a lot, you're going to get bagged. And then more importantly, depending on the coach, but generally speaking, in my experience, the practices for goalies are, from a physical standpoint, might actually be harder than games. Just because, you know, if you're doing kind of two-on-one rush drills of any sort, it's basically every few seconds you're taking a shot.
As opposed to 50% of the game, you're taking shots, right? It's a split possession.
Yeah.
But what's the average line is somewhere between like 50 and 60 seconds, maybe even shorter.
Yeah.
And that's all anaerobic, right? But aside from that, they're doing that, what, I think 20 minutes a game is like, that's a lot of minutes for a player.
Depends on the position. Generally, like 18 to 20 is kind of normal for defensemen.
Okay.
Once you start getting about to, you know, 24, 25 and up, that's high for defensemen. Forwards, once you're 18, 20, that's generally considered high. But, I mean, we'll have defensemen that play 30 minutes at times. Right. And we'll have forwards that get up to, like, 24. The unfortunate thing is, not unfortunate, but the difficult thing is so much is situational. It's special teams. You know, if you have a player that gets injured and you're playing a man short, that's going to affect it. So there's a lot of variables that in-game that you really can't predict for that are going to dictate how many minutes a player plays. I mean, you generally do have your guys that are your high minute guys versus your low minute guys, and based off of your top players versus the bottom of the lineup, but it's going to vary quite a bit.
Yeah. Heck yeah. You got anything else?
No, that's great.
This has been awesome, man. What's the best way for our listeners to get in touch with you?
LinkedIn's probably the best way to do it. Doug Davidson on Vegas Golden Knights.
Cool. We'll make sure we put that up in the show notes. Thanks again for coming by, man. This is cool. Like, you're here for a couple days, if that, and snuck in here.
No, it's a pleasure. I always love being able to catch up with Rob, and it was great to see the facility.
Thanks, Doug.
You're the man. Thanks, Doug.
Thanks for listening to the On Cue Performance Therapy Podcast. If you'd like this episode, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. It would mean so much to me if you could leave us a 5-star review so more listeners like you could get this important information. See you next time.